abortion is an attempt at a chemical, a drug-induced or surgical solution to a social problem. We shouldn't be solving social problems with surgery or drugs. Yes. We solve social problems with social answers.
Hi, I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute, and this is another great edition of Straight Talk on Life Issues.
And I'm Victor Nieves, your co-host.
You know, Victor, many are led to believe that abortion is safe, but there is no such thing as a safe abortion. There never has been. There never will be. Pro-abortion activists skew and twist information as a delusional way to, quote, prove abortion is safe.
That's right, but women who get an abortion often experience complications or even death every year after an abortion over the following 10-year period.
Abortion impacts two lives, the life of the dead baby, of the preborn child, and the women who are physically harmed and emotionally traumatized by this dangerous procedure.
You know, a substantial amount of research indicates that abortion isolates women and can often cause both short-term and long-term physical and psychological harm to women. Let's jump right in as we talk about how abortion puts a mother's life in danger. We're joined today by Dr. John Burchowski. He's the founder of the pro-life medical practice Tepeyac OBGYN and Divine Mercy Care. Dr. Burchowski performed abortions in his residency before experiencing a dramatic and profound conversion that led him to found Tepeyac as a way to help women with life-affirming care. We're also joined by Dr. Donna Harrison. She's a physician, board-certified in obstetrics and gynecology for 30 years. She's currently serving as director of research for the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the largest non-sectarian pro-life physician organization in the world.
First of all, I want to welcome both of you to the program. I'm sure you're going to be sharing some wonderful information. Dr. Harrison and Dr. Burchowski, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brad. Great to be with you.
Now, first of all, is abortion for the life of the mother ever needed or valid? Dr. Harrison?
Yeah, Brad, there's a key assumption in that question that I want to unpack, and that is the definition of this word abortion, because this word abortion is like a chameleon. It has many, many, many different meanings. So APLOG, the American Association of Pro-Life OB-GYNs, has been very clear. We have a practice guideline talking about concluding pregnancy ethically. And in there, we clearly define what we mean by abortion and what is actually legally defined in many places as abortion. And that is intentional feticide. So the doing a procedure with the purpose and intent of producing a dead baby, of making sure that baby doesn't make it out of the womb alive. With that definition of abortion, no, it is never necessary to intentionally end the life of the baby for the purpose of ending the life of the baby. Now, sometimes we get in situations where the mom's life will be in danger if she continues to be joined to the baby. In those cases, we separate the mom and the baby, knowing that the baby may not live if it's before the age of being able to live outside the womb, but also knowing that if we don't separate, we lose them both. And if we do separate, we lose the baby, but hopefully save the mom's life.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you both this question as we speak about this topic. How does abortion put a mother's life in danger? Dr. Harrison?
Well, there's two things medically we look at when we try to evaluate whether something is going to put the mother's life in danger. And that's for the purposes of informed consent. So with abortion, every single woman should know what her specific risks are. So there are short-term risks. That's the risk inherent in any surgery, bleeding, infection, damage to the organ being worked on, the organs nearby, or death. That can happen in any procedure. There are long-term consequences, which I'll unpack in a minute. But specifically with abortion, her risk of death increases by 38% for each week of gestation. For as long as the pregnancy progresses week by week, her risk of death increases by 38%. So while there may be a small risk of death from a six-week abortion, there is a much greater risk of death from a 20-week abortion. And in fact, at that point, when the CDC published that paper looking at death from abortion, at that point, the risk of death at 20 weeks from a surgical abortion was greater than the risk of death from live birth. So anything after the baby can survive outside the womb, the risk of killing the baby inside the mom's womb and then killing the mom is greater than her risk of delivering. The long-term risks are risks that happen after as a consequence of the abortion. And those are very well documented in the medical literature for the past 60 years, preterm birth and subsequent pregnancies. So when you open the woman's womb, you actually weaken her cervix. That is the part of the womb that holds the baby in. So when the cervix is weaker, the next time when she has a wanted baby, she's more likely to lose that baby because the cervix is weakened and have a very premature birth, or she could have a miscarriage that happens before the baby can even survive. So preterm birth is an extremely important risk long-term. Another risk is breast cancer. If she's aborting a first baby and has never had a baby before, we know from recent studies that we've done that women who abort a first pregnancy, 1/3 of them never go on to have children. If you never have children, you have increased your risk of breast cancer just by never having children. But when you abort, you've got a huge surge of estrogen hormone that stimulates breast tissue growth. That's where the breast tenderness comes from. And then as you take that baby beyond 20 weeks of growth inside the womb, then there's a second set of hormones that come from the placenta that actually turns the breast into milk production. Milk-producing breast tissue is permanently cancer resistant. And so when you take a baby to term, that first baby, you then have 95% of your breast tissue that is permanently cancer resistant. And that's why the most important factor in your risk of breast cancer is when did you have your first baby to term. So breast cancer is an issue. And then more than anything else, and this I even hear from pro-choice physicians, is the issue of mental health. So an increased risk of suicide, drug abuse, and major depression requiring hospitalization. Why? Because the mom is biologically bonded to that human being in her womb. And separating that biological tight bond tears her soul.
Thank you, Dr. Harrison. Dr. Bruchowski, would you add anything to that?
Our practice has partnered with, let's say, 30 regional pregnancy centers. So we see a lot of women who are truly in that split that Donna talked about, that renting place, because most of them say, I have no choice. I must do this. And so they come to you, and we're not a vending machine. You ask for the abortion and then we provide it. We're a profession. There's a way of medicine. There's truth in advertising, but there's also truth in scientific data that's from all over the world. And that, you know, just to add to Donna on the breast cancer side, before abortion was legal, the only two studies that were doing epidemiologically studied was China and Russia that were doing abortions as part of family planning back before 1965. Well, that data of breast cancer was already there and it's been carried forward. But when you're sitting in front of a woman who's going to make a life-changing decision, body, soul, and spirit, psychological, emotional, physical, it's not just like, oh, you're going to have your tooth pulled. It's all those issues that go before having the abortion that cause that psychological space of, I have no choice here. I must do this. And I can tell you that being on both sides of this issue, and also talking to my friends who, whether they're life-affirming or pro-choice, pro-abortion, I think we do a much better job, absolutely a much better job of informed consent. I wish we did a better job on stopping the confusion that's out there and the fear that's out there. Because once you start silencing the patient, when they start conflating these issues, healthcare with abortion, you absolutely end up with shame and guilt and control and incredible suffering, which is what the data supports.
Now, Dr. Bruchowski, you've alluded to this in your remarks, but I want to talk about this more specifically. Those advocating for abortion for decades go to the latest turn of phrase that they depend upon to make converts to killing your unborn child because they don't have an argument when we're talking about abortion specifically and how it affects women and all of that. Their latest kick now is to claim that abortion is health care. We know that's not, but what is your argument against that?
The way that I talk about it is the purpose of medicine is to promote health. And the fact that you're pregnant shows that the body works. Now, you may not want this pregnancy right now, but what I must tell you is that there are risks and benefits of intending to end the pregnancy, which doesn't mean finishing the problem. It really means ending the life that's within you. And so health It's based on healing and caring, not on destruction and brutality and violence. And I tell them that I've done them before. And in my informed consent, this is what happens. And then I leave that with the patient. And then I simply will say to them, do you understand that 77 to 92% of us doctors don't do abortions? Because once again, Brad, I have found that since language and logic no longer matter to most, everything's fungible. You know, when I say mercy, they think mercy killing. When I say holy, they think, oh no, it's a holy abortion. It's now a sacrament. That's where we are in the debate. Shout your abortion. Don't keep it secret. Well, the vast majority of abortionists are not regular healthcare providers. And so when I talk like that, it's almost like trying to right brain them to listen to the depth and listen to themselves in that difficulty.
Yes. And as your added history of former abortionists, that lends a lot of credence to what you tell your patients and others. Dr. Harrison, do you think that the healthcare argument is relevant? And if not, explain why.
It's hard to add much to what Dr. Bruchowski said because it's brilliant and you can go with him into the exam room and understand. I think from a little different perspective, the issue is what Dr. Bruchowski brought up, which is what is health? As physicians, and especially as physicians who have taken the Hippocratic Oath and abide by that, it means doing no harm. It means not intentionally killing someone. And intrinsically, abortion, as we defined it before, intentional feticide, kills somebody. We kill the fetus. We kill the human being in the womb. And so, like Dr. Bruchowski said, health and healing and mercy and compassion for another human being. So it doesn't produce the best result. There are no studies that show that abortion has an advantage over having the child long-term with other health issues. So it's not like abortion was brought in as this solution to a medical problem. Abortion is an attempt at a chemical, a drug-induced or surgical solution to a social problem. Yes. We shouldn't be solving social problems with surgery or drugs. Yes. We solve social problems with social answers. And probably the saddest thing I ever read was going on the Guttmacher website. And if you Google reasons women abort, reading them, one woman said, I could choose anything as long as I aborted. That is not empowerment. It's social reasons. The father of the baby wants this baby dead. My parents want this baby dead. There's people that are pressuring women, coercing women into this solution and into this abortion. And it's not what she wants. And it doesn't empower her.
We heard a lot in the news about the two women in Georgia who died from chemical abortion. And of course, the mainstream media reported that as a result of protective legislation for unborn babies in the state. What are your takes on that situation, Dr. Bruchowski?
When that woman returned from North Carolina back to Georgia, I believe, her issue was what we have known from the study of chemical abortions from 2000 to 2015, that there is a much higher risk when you use the two drugs, there's a much higher risk of an incomplete elective abortion, much more than surgical abortion, because in surgery, we make sure we, when we're doing them, we try our best to end and remove everything. This woman had what we call retained products left in her womb that were setting up an infection, which is the risk that increases that Donna so eloquently talked about earlier. Yeah, this is a risk. When she presented to the emergency room, right away, there was an infection there. There was an endometritis, we call it, an infection of the lining of the uterus. That woman needed antibiotics and a DNC before it got worse. And they delayed. It was malpractice, as well as taking those chemical abortion drugs. One of the side effects is we know this. And because those two combinations occurred, that would be my explanation. It's not the laws. These laws that we have, any solid emergency room physician that I have known for 35 to 40 years would have identified it, recognized it, and treated it.
Well yeah, said, Dr. Harrison.
I haven't read the details. I mean, I'm not privy to the medical record, but I'll say a couple of things. One, from researching what our group has looked at in the Medicaid database, we can say that up to 60% of abortions that come in to the emergency room, the women, they get miscoded as a spontaneous miscarriage. And this is really dangerous. So women that are miscoded actually have a higher risk of serious complications. Because when you're in the ER and you think a woman's coming in with a miscarriage, you think, ah, okay, she's got some retained tissue. We can give her a drug, misoprostol. We can see how things go. If you know that woman has had a chemical abortion and she's a little iffy with her labs, it is very possible that you would miss the fact that she's septic with a deadly infection called Clostridium sordelli. It's killed lots of women after chemical abortion, because the chemical abortion drugs suppress a woman's immune system. So she's not going to react like you expect a normal miscarriage to react. And it's been so dangerous that abortionists are telling women, oh, if you have a problem, go to the ER. And this is something, John, I'm sure you can comment on. It is astounding to me that any medical professional would start a procedure and then dump their complications on an ER that doesn't have their medical record, that doesn't have the history with the patient, out of the blue. At least when we, you know, John, you and I were trained as a doctor, you start a procedure, you clean up your mess. You don't dump it on somebody else. And yet the abortion industry, through this whole willy-nilly telemedicine dispensing, is starting something that can be dangerous for a woman and then washing their hands of it and saying, it's the ER's problem now. No record, and the woman may be instructed to not tell the truth. So I think it's always complicated and difficult to look back, you know, without actually looking at the medical record to know what really happened in those cases. But John is completely right in that we've known since Mifeprex was approved that it increases a woman's risk of a deadly infection from Clostridium sordelli, which is a soil bacteria. Most of us women who are normally immune competent can fight it off. But if you suppress their immune system with Mifeprex and misoprostol, they're at increased risk of dying from this infection.
Well, Dr. Harrison, we know that morning sickness, weight gain, headaches, moodiness, swelling, other things like that are common parts of pregnancy. Do these symptoms of pregnancy constitute a risk to the mother's life or health that justifies killing the unborn child?
Well, I have to laugh a little bit because a lot of those symptoms are also symptoms of having a period once a month. So that's not life-threatening. Pregnancy is always an act of love. It's always an act of self-sacrifice. You're saying, I value the life of my child in my womb so much that I'm willing to handle this discomfort in order to provide a place for my child to live. And I think that's the issue. We as a society are so unwilling to lay down our life for other people. And I think motherhood, the fact that women choose to continue to become pregnant, to carry their babies, is a in-your-face testimony that some people are willing to lay down their life for other people and to handle the discomfort.
Well said. Thank you. Could you share with us one or two events with patients where abortion has put their life or serious health risk at stake? Dr. Harrison, let's start with you.
Well, I'll share with you a patient, not the right name, so details have been changed, but the essential is absolutely true. And it is what changed me from being one of the many OB-GYNs that say, yeah, well, I won't do abortions, but I'm, you know, too busy doing other things to actually get involved. This interaction with this patient changed my life. She came in, she was 10 or so weeks pregnant, and said, I need a pregnancy test and I'm going to have an abortion. And I said, well, tell you what, let's do some diagnosis first. Let's find out if you actually have a living baby, because there's a chance you could miscarry. And I want you to bring your significant other as well. So she brought her significant other. I'm going to call her Jane and I'm going to call him Fred. She brought Fred in. We did an ultrasound. Baby performed well, hands and feet moving. And I showed Jane and I forced Fred to get up and come over to look at least once at the ultrasound machine. And then he went back and sat down with his magazine again. And I said, Jane, I'm happy for you. She goes, well, I'm not happy. She said, I can't do this again. I raised one child by myself, who's a teenager, which challenging time. She said, I can't do it by myself. And Fred said, nothing. I said, oh, Jane, so you're telling me if you had someone that could walk with you through this pregnancy that you would bring this child to birth? Dr. Harrison, I can't do it by myself. I am limited. I am the single sole breadwinner in my family, and I can't do it alone. And Fred said, nothing. And I'm not a terribly patient person. So I said, Fred, hello, put down your magazine and come over here. Did you hear what Jane said? And Fred said, Well, it's her body, it's her choice. And he went and sat down with his magazine and he killed his child, because at that point, Jane knew she couldn't count on him and she went out and had the abortion. And then she came back to me 2 weeks later, because just like John said, she's not gonna go back to the abortionist. She said, "Dr. Harrison, that's the worst thing I ever did in my life. That's the worst decision I ever made. And why didn't you try harder to talk me out of it?" Mm-hmm. And you know, at that point in history, I didn't have the research that we have now, but that's what motivated me to become part of the American Association of Pro-Life OB-GYNs. So what would I tell her now? Jane, you're going to increase your risk of suicide, depression, and drug abuse. You're going to increase your risk of preterm birth. You're going to increase your risk of breast cancer. I would have had something to tell her. And so that's what motivated me. It was Jane and Fred. And it also opened my eyes to the fact that a lot of abortions happen because Fred says nothing, or he says the wimpy, "Well, it's her body, it's her choice," you know, instead of saying, "Honey, I love you. I'll be with you. I will walk with you through this. This is our child, and I love this baby, and I love you." And if that would happen, if men would man up, we'd see a lot fewer abortions.
Dr. Buchelski?
I have a story about an abortionist who stopped providing abortions after taking care of one of our perinatal hospice patients. One week while I was getting chemotherapy for my cancer, the only practice that covered me were the abortion practice. And late one night, one of our children with a diagnosis incompatible with life presented itself in labor. And that doctor, who happened to be an abortionist, delivered this 33, 34 week child who lived about 6 minutes. Well, the child had anencephaly, which means no skull, nothing above the brainstem, no cortex tissue. And he was so irate the night he did it, he came into my hospital room 5 miles away just to let me know after he left the room, "My God, Bruchowski, what do? You deliver tumors." This was a freaking monster. How could I waste 25 minutes of my life doing what I just did? I am no longer gonna cover you. And he stormed out. 5 years later, he comes back in to my office. I'm practicing. I recovered from the cancer. We were close friends prior to this, because with my experience, I helped stop some hemorrhaging and infection when he ran into difficulties after his abortions. He came in, he presented me with a token of love, a picture of Dubrovnik, Yugoslavia, which I just adore. And he sat down, he said, "Hey, you remember when I cussed you out that night?" "Oh yeah, Jim." Oh, that's also not his name. "Yeah, Jim, I remember. You and I were really good friends and we haven't talked since." He says, "Let me tell you something. I'm a really good doctor, or I thought I was. I wanted my patients to have that much love in my practice, the care, the compassion. I saw more family, bonding, loving. The children all hugged this child as if it was the only child there was. And I put up with it for 17 minutes and I couldn't do it any longer. So I ran out of the room. I never told you, someone else finished the paperwork. I came to you to yell at you. But I want to tell you now, 5 years later, that about 7 or 8 months after that, I stopped providing abortion service."
Ooh.
Not only the elective, but the most common, the medical abortions that we do for lives that are fetal lives that are incompatible with a long life. And he had tears in his eyes. He cried. He told me not to tell anybody. He says, "But thank you for sharing your cancer through this woman, because I saw myself as cancerous."
Mm-hmm.
And wow. Just like Donna, these are life-changing events.
Yeah, those are both remarkable stories. Thank you for sharing them. You two have given us boatloads of information that our listeners can take to heart. I want to thank you both for being part of this very special program.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Brad, also.
Victor, I just can't tell you how much I admire Donna, who I've known for decades and watched her work in pro-life efforts. And now meeting Dr. Buchelski, I see how we have another wonderful advocate and ambassador for the babies and their mothers.
That's right. And in the case of Dr. Buchelski, his story is profound. Again, we've seen this before. People who have experience with abortion firsthand, who have their eyes open and they see the reality of how evil it really is, they become such incredible partners in giving the unborn a voice, giving them someone to defend them. And they know that from their own experience that the unborn are human.
And there's something that Dr. Harrison said that I felt was profound. She said, "Abortion doesn't make you unpregnant. It basically makes you the parent of a dead baby. You'll have that baby. Either that baby will be dead and more likely in pieces, or you will have a live, intact child to love and be blessed by.
That's right. That one really hit home. And I want to encourage you, our listener, to visit our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find resources, some of the information that we've mentioned today, things that you can share with your friends and family, highlighting the documented dangers of abortion. Again, both short-term and long-term. You'll also find Dr. Burchowski's book there and that resource, menandabortion.net. So head to lifeissues.org and make use of those programs for your friends, family members, and community members. And be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.